All those nice things that they said about me, thank you very much. But you miss what I'm actually doing these days, which is working with BDT in Africa. Those who wish, instead of coming to the Radhastami celebration here, can come to the opening of our new temple in Gaborone, Botswana. My work is with PPT, Bhaktivedanta Book Trust, which in the last couple of years has started an African division. Show and tell. This is Beyond Birth and Death in Zulu language. And this is Beyond Birth and Death in Xhosa language. And this is Perfect Questions, Perfect Answers, also in Xhosa. And the same book is being published simultaneously in Swahili. So that's three languages, which gives us about 2,100 active African languages left to go. We'll read today from Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. This is 9th chapter, text 3. Ashradhana purusha dharmasyasya parantapa aprapyamam nivartante mityu samsara vartmani. Those who are not faithful in this devotional service cannot attain me, O conqueror of enemies. Therefore, they return to the path of birth and death in this material world. Purport. The faithless cannot accomplish this process of devotional service. That is the purport of this verse. Faith is created by association with devotees. Unfortunate people, even after hearing all the evidence of Vedic literature from great personalities, still have no faith in God. They are hesitant and cannot stay fixed in the devotional service of the Lord. Thus, faith is a most important factor for progress in Krishna consciousness. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said that faith. Oh, Pujari Loba, Shanti Rakhiya. That's my guess. Worked, okay. Guess right. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said that faith is the complete conviction that simply by serving the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, one can achieve all perfection. That is called real faith. As stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Yata turar mula nishe chanena tripyanti tatskanta puchopashaka pranopaharachcha yatendriyanam tatayava sarvarhanam achyutejya. By giving water to the root of a tree, one satisfies its branches, twigs, and leaves. And by supplying food to the stomach, one satisfies all the senses of the body. Similarly, by engaging in the transcendental service of the Supreme Lord, one automatically satisfies all the demigods and all other living entities. Therefore, after reading Bhagavad Gita, one should promptly come to the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita. One should give up all other engagements and adopt the service of the Supreme Lord, Krishna, the Personality of Godhead. If one is convinced of this philosophy of life, that is faith. Om Jnana Timiram Tasya Anjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militam Jina Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manovistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Padamayam Tathati Shapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Zatapada Kamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavascha Sri Rupam Shavrajatam Shavagana Raganatam Vitam Stam Sajivam Sadraitam Shavakutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Shavagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitascha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopita Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kamshana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vamsha Govitarupyascha Kripa Sindho Vyayacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Ashradhana Purusha Dharmasyasya Parantapa Aprapyamam Nivartam Te Ritu Samsara Bhartmani. The issue here is Shraddha, or faith. Ashradhana Purusha, persons who have no faith, who are lacking in faith. Dharmasyasya, in the path of Sanatana Dharma, devotional service, spoken by Krishna, aprapyamam can't achieve Krishna. Then, nivartante ritu samsara vartani. Instead, they continue on the path of birth and death in this material world. The term has become popular in the West, leap of faith, the idea being that a faithless person just abandons his faithlessness and takes a sort of jump into the darkness. That's not the Vedic path. The faith is not sentimental faith, where we sort of have a rousing meeting, maybe with some threats and some bribes, and somehow or other manipulate the audience in such a way that they come forward and say, "Yes, I have faith." Actually, everyone has faith. Prabhupada gives the example that a gentleman goes to the barber and sits in a chair like that while someone holds a razor to his throat. Quite an act of faith. You pay $300 or $500 or $1,000 and someone gives you a piece of paper that says that you can get on an airplane and go to India. It's nothing but a piece of paper. And yet we have faith. Yes, take my money and give me that piece of paper. in so many ways. You go home and we're to a restaurant and you have your meal and you have faith that no one's going to poison you. And so you eat. And everyone has faith. Without faith, no one can turn on the water tap, no one can take a step forward, no one can take a step back. We spend, what is it, $250,000 to go to college with faith that some good result will come to me. So faith is there, but the faith and spiritual understanding may be lacking because of a poor fund of knowledge. With a poor fund of knowledge, I won't have faith. I'll look at that piece of paper and say, is that all you're going to give me is a piece of paper? And I give you $1,200? How do I know? Or so many things. I don't have faith because I don't have knowledge, or because I don't have sufficient knowledge. I have a little knowledge, but not enough knowledge to say, all right. I know someone, the travel agent, yes, no problem. I don't know very much about his reputation, I don't know, then maybe I'm doubtful. Doubt is also a function of intelligence. Otherwise, faith will be misplaced. Some rascal with a big beard and big hair will say that he's God, and some foolish persons lacking discrimination will accept him as God. In so many ways, without doubt, we can be cheated. Doubt is necessary to discriminate. It's what's foolishness from what's intelligent? What's sensible from what makes no sense? What's genuine from what's sham? So intelligence is also required. And when an intelligent person comes in touch with real knowledge and subjects that or receives that knowledge with intelligence, his faith will grow. When he associates with genuine saintly persons, his faith will grow. The Adoshata, Srila Rupa Goswami says that the beginning of the whole process is faith. One time Srila Prabhupada was discussing this verse, he discussed faith as interest. That preliminary faith is, all right, let me go there and hear what they have to say. That much faith that, all right, let me invest half an hour, and see what they're talking about. Or let me buy this book and see what it has to say. All right, there's some interest. Or you could say some faith that my hour won't be a total loss, that my contribution for the book will not be a total waste. Something interesting may be there. That's the beginning of faith. And then as one reads the book or associates with the devotees, presents one's ear for hearing the message, uses one's intelligence to understand the message, presents one's questions, one's doubts, as faith grows. Not in a challenging way. Doubts, when Arjuna is presenting before Krishna, when Arjuna is hearing Bhagavad Gita, he brings forward his doubts. In the sixth chapter, this is my doubt, O Krishna. You've explained to me this yoga system, but what happens to a person who practices this and isn't successful? have a doubt about them. In several places, the doubt is there. And he places the matter before Krishna to dispel those doubts. Doubt is dispelled by knowledge. I come to Dallas, I don't know which way to go. I'm in doubt. Should I turn right? Should I turn left? But when I get, when I get my Google map, or when I get some other authoritative source of information, I ask a local resident which way to go, then my doubt is dispelled by knowledge. Doubt is dispelled by knowledge. So Arjuna places his doubts before Krishna. Says, you are the person who can dispel my doubts. Because he accepts Krishna as authority. And he's approaching Krishna to hear in a submissive way. Challenging won't be helpful. If I just want to show my smarts, that's not the recommended way to learn. But it doesn't mean that I just have to sit and swallow everything when, in fact, something is perplexing or something doesn't seem to add up. The intelligent person can present, here are my doubts. Otherwise, he keeps his doubts and remains a Shuddhadhana, faithless. He doesn't have faith. And he also, because he has doubts, but he doesn't bring forward his doubts for being cleared up. Like the patient, he's in his diseased condition, but he doesn't say to the doctor, this is my problem, or he doesn't even go to the doctor. Then he remains diseased. And when he goes to the doctor, then the doctor says, it appears to be this. Even then the patient may say, well, I don't know, it doesn't seem like that. Then the doctor considers further, what is the situation? Or he explains, no, actually, it's this way. But he doesn't go and say, doctor, here's what's wrong with me, and here's the right diagnosis. Here's the right course of treatment. I'm right, am I? Not? No, you're not right. No, you don't know what you're talking about. Just to go to the doctor to confirm one's own, have a rubber stamp put on what one already thinks is useless. In Ayurveda, there's a text, I think it's in Shushruta Samhita someplace, there's a list of people that a doctor shouldn't treat. A person who's incurable, no use treating him. And certain other kinds of persons. And in the list is Vaidyamanina. A person who thinks he's a doctor. Thank you. A person who thinks he's a doctor. No use treating him because he... let him treat himself. So the Bhagavad Gita begins, actually, or Krishna's instruction in the Bhagavad Gita begins, when Arjuna admits that he's perplexed. Up till then, he's saying that I shouldn't fight because of this, because of that. But finally, he admits that he's perplexed. That's the beginning of the instruction. Spiritual life will not be accessible to the person who has it all together. For the person who's mastered life. Okay, someone here is probably not here for the lecture. Find it's a lot more fun outside. Now, the person who has it all together in this material world never comes to Krishna consciousness because he's proud that I'm good looking, I'm wealthy, I'm well educated, I come from a good family. No problem. He's already, because he's a first-class fool, he doesn't consider that I'm trying to be happy in this material world, but the material world is set up in such a way that there must be frustration. He doesn't see it. It will come to him. Your good looks are not eternal. Your money is not a guarantee for happiness. There's no guarantee that you can keep your money. Your education is not a guarantee of anything either. Material world is certified as being a source of trouble. And an intelligent person will see that. A fool will not see that. Everything's fine. No problem to solve. But an intelligent person will see that life is problematic. I'm trying to be happy, and so many things are blocking my path to happiness. So many anxieties, so many perplexities, so many struggles. And even if that's not so, even if I think, no problems, no anxieties, no struggles, it all fits, it will all be ripped up. Ashashvata. Everything will be dissolved. My husband will die, or my wife will die, or this person will die, or that person will die, or I'll die. Or before death, these four miseries are there. Janma mrityu jara vyadhi. Birth, death, old age, and disease. For everyone. These are, Krishna says, one should always keep these things in view. One should be aware of these troubles, miseries, inevitably presented by material nature. One should be aware of them. Because these constitute the real issue in life, the real problem in life. That I'm trying to be happy, I'm trying to be permanently happy, and yet nature is constituted in such a way that it always gives me troubles. And nothing can, I can't hold on to anything. It's all finally taken away. That problem I have to solve. If I understand that there's birth and death, then I have that problem to solve. Why do I have to go through one lifetime after another lifetime after another lifetime after another lifetime? Sometimes a human being, sometimes a dog. And if I don't accept that there's birth after birth, then still I have perplexity. What is this, the use of one life and then die? I only live for 50 or 100 years and then my existence is permanently extinguished. And what's the use of living even? Why work so hard just to make my way to the graveyard? Either way we take it, this essential problem is there, that material nature or this world will not allow me to have the brightly painted picture of happiness that's sold to us by mind. That's the actual situation. Prakriti mohinim shrita. The fools have faith in material nature, or the agents of material nature. The doctors will solve my problem. Science will solve my problem. Technology will solve my problem. My government will protect me. My life insurance policy, my, you name it, job security, tenure. My family will be there for me. The faith is there in so many things. But these sources of security are described in Srimad Bhagavatam as fallible soldiers. My husband or wife is also under the clutches of death. My sons or my parents are also under the clutches of death. My government is expert at causing death, but can't protect me from death. And yet I'm taking shelter of these sources of material security and imagining, yes, it's all right. Everything's not old. The intelligent person will understand this. And the fool will think, oh, they're building a new mall just down the block. Life is getting better. This is Maya's arrangement. Maya covers our knowledge so that we believe, we have faith, that material happiness is just around the corner. Little adjustment, little extra work, the right strategy, everything will be fine. This is Maya's trick. So the intelligent person will see the problem. We'll see the problematic nature of material existence. And that person goes looking. How do I solve this problem? What to do? And by good fortune, such a person may come into the association of saintly persons, of devotees. By good fortune, Srila Rupa Goswami came in touch with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and put before him this question, who am I? And why are the miseries of material nature always giving me trouble? Miseries of from other living beings, miseries from nature itself, too much heat, too much cold, tornadoes, so many things. And miseries from my own body, my own mind. Why are these miseries always there? And who am I? I don't even know who I am. People honor me as being a learned Brahmin, but I'm so learned that I don't even know who I am. You please explain this to me. This was the beginning. Tad vijnana artham sagurume bhakti. If one is serious about actually solving the problems of life, one should approach a person in knowledge and get understanding. This Bhagavad Gita is spoken by Krishna, whom we accept as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prabhupada said in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, as it is, that to get the benefit of the book, one should at least theoretically accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of God. At least theoretically, that much. All right, let's take it that Krishna knows what he's talking about. Let's take it that Krishna is God and see where that leads us. At least that. Let me, we say, read with an open mind. and with regard for Krishna. After all, so many great learned men have read Bhagavad Gita and gotten so much benefit from it. Whether we're talking Gandhi or Thoreau or so many. Ramanujacharya, Shankaracharya, Madhvacharya. Let me read this book and see what Krishna has to say. And if one reads Bhagavad Gita, especially in the association of devotees, first is one should hear Bhagavad Gita from a devotee of Krishna. Because it's spoken to Arjuna for that reason. Bhaktosi me sakha cheti rasyam gejavita. You're my devotee, you're my friend, so I'm speaking the secrets, the confidential knowledge of Bhagavad Gita to you. That means the devotee is the right person for understanding Bhagavad Gita. Krishna will say, Manmana Bhavaman Bhakta, become my devotee. So if a person has read, become my devotee, and he refuses, no, I'm not going to become your devotee. How can he be the right person to explain the science? No, I'm going to do something else. Yeah. Do something else and leave Bhagavad Gita alone. But if we want to understand Bhagavad Gita, we should understand it from the devotee of Krishna so that we can understand it as it is. And the best way to understand the Bhagavad Gita is from a devotee and in the company of devotees. Because the devotees are the like-minded persons who are on that path of understanding Bhagavad Gita and implementing the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. We take it that association of devotees means there'll be those who are more advanced than I am. And by hearing in their company, I'll come to understand. We do this in material life. I'm interested in the stock market. I associate with stockbrokers. I'm interested in chemistry. I associate with chemists. I'm interested in whatever it is. I associate with those who are already down the path further than I am. That's practical. So we should understand Bhagavad Gita the same way. In the company of those who've taken it seriously and who've adopted the path chalked out by Krishna. They have faith in the subject matter, presumably because they've studied the subject. Not just that they're fools, oh, Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavad Gita. Actually, there are so many people who have faith in Bhagavad Gita and never read Bhagavad Gita. And don't even know what it says. It's just sort of a flag, the Gita. Have you read it? Well, it's our great Hindu book of wisdom, which I haven't read. Useless. And then they have so many hodgepodge ideas, which if they'd actually read Bhagavad Gita, would be cleared up. So our Krishna consciousness movement is for this purpose. So that intelligent and sincere persons can take advantage of this great wisdom of Bhagavad Gita and place their doubts, place their questions, place their issues, and have them answered by the great philosophy of the Vedic literature, the great philosophy spoken by Krishna. Then faith will grow. Sadhu Sangha by association of devotees, then by actually taking up the practices, chanting Hare Krishna, offering food to Krishna, Krishna says, offer me a leaf, flower, fruit, water. Person has faith, he'll say, yes, why not? What will it cost me? I'm already buying the fruit anyway. Let me offer it to you and accept the prasada. Why not? So under the guidance of devotees, he takes up the various practices that increase one's understanding of Krishna consciousness or help develop, uncover one's Krishna consciousness. He avoids the things that are impediments to spiritual life or gives up the things that are impediments on the path of spiritual life. And he becomes advanced. Heart becomes purified, knowledge develops, and he becomes Krishna conscious. Otherwise, he becomes Krishna conscious, and Krishna says, and finally he attains me. He gets freed from birth and death and goes back home, back to God. Otherwise, the alternative. Stay here and go through it again and go through it again and go through it again. These are the two options presented in the All right, we have a little time. Are there some questions? There's a microphone, I think, a second microphone, which is somewhere. Let's see how far away it is. Anyway, right there, coming.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
In your discussion earlier, you mentioned that in the Bhagavad Gita, it says that one who reads Bhagavad Gita should give up all kinds of engagements. What does that mean? What kind of engagements? Are those material duties towards parents or family?
I didn't say that, but Krishna said it. So
yeah,
it's all right.
That's what he gave us.
Anything which doesn't help in Krishna consciousness should be given up. Anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjana. Whatever is favorable for Krishna consciousness, I should accept. Whatever is unfavorable, I should reject.
So how can one know whether a kind of activity, whether it is favorable to Krishna consciousness?
One has to associate with the devotees and take guidance, just like in business. How do I know whether this is good business or bad business? So I associate with those who are expert businessmen. I say, what do you think of this deal? He says, well, he's just trying to cheat you. That's the stupidest contract I've ever seen in my life. Or he says, no, it's a very good opportunity. So you understand from those who are more expert, because I don't know that. So I have to approach those who are more advanced and understand. It's practical.
As of now, I feel this material education, I mean, from a master's or PhD, this is nowhere related to spirituality, and I feel this is not much helpful to my spiritual growth. So should I give up this?
Which?
My education, this material education, studying in a school.
If you have that conviction, give it up.
Then what should I say to my parents who are expecting some kind of support from me in terms of some moral support or financial support?
Say that there's a greater purpose in life than supporting my parents. Say, you're my parents in one life, I'm very grateful, but I've been through millions of lifetimes and I want to finish this business. You're my parents, but Krishna is my supreme parent. To which parent do I owe greater responsibility? To the parents of this body or to the parents of the soul? So many parents will say, oh, no, our son should support us. Our son should make money. Our son should get married. Our son should go to school. And if he likes, he can also be religious. And whether or not he goes back to Godhead, that's not an issue. Whether he stays in this material world is not an issue for us. He should support us. He should be responsible. He should stay in this material world the way we stay in this material world. This issue is presented very nicely by one of our devotees, I believe in Pune. One young man wanted to put aside his other, maybe his education, his other things, and devote himself fully to the activities of the temple. The parents were very distressed. The father came, but please don't encourage my son to do this. He has his whole life ahead of him. So the devotee answered that, yes, actually you're right. Your son should continue in his path of education and so on, and you should join the temple. You finish your education, your business, everything you've done, now you join. That's all right.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
Nice that you've come back home to Dallas for a long time.
Thank you.
Earlier in the class you mentioned about doubt. And I have a lot of doubts many times, and I turn to Radha Kala Chanji. I turn to my chanting. I turn to Prabhupada. I turn to my Guru Maharaj. My question was, what other ways you can suggest?
Read the books. It's not just prayer is very good. I pray to Krishna. I pray to my Guru. Please guide me. That's very good. But my reception, my ability to receive the message may not be so perfect. Krishna is sitting in everyone's heart. He's already directing us what to do. But we don't get it because our hearts are not fully pure. Therefore, the message is there in black and white. What should I do? Krishna is telling me what to do. Whole Bhagavad Gita, what should I do? And not in just a simplistic fashion, the whole science is there. And after Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam is there, giving me knowledge, what to do. What should I do with my life? What should I do with this duty, or this issue, or that issue? So much is there. So the more I become conversant with this Bhagavad Gita, the more I get a clear understanding. Otherwise, 10 of us go before the deity and pray, and the deity tells one, you go work, and he tells the other one, oh yes, just ask your wife what to do. And he tells the other one that go worship Lord Shiva. And he tells you, everyone has got his own idea of what the deity is telling him. Usually the deity is telling him just what he wants to hear. Because our heart is not pure. So, but when we hear Bhagavad Gita as it is, and when we hear it explained by a bona fide spiritual master, then we get through a clear direction. Do this. It's a science. If we have a chemistry exam, we don't just come before the deity and say, my dear Lord, please reveal to me the entire science of chemistry. Now, if we've studied all the books, we've done everything, then we may come before the deity that please, if you want to come to the deity for such a small and insignificant thing as passing the chemistry exam. But it's not a substitute. The books are there for this reason, so that we can get knowledge. So this combination, reading the books, praying for the mercy of Krishna, taking association of devotees. Okay. Such a treasure is there of knowledge in these books. Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj. Maharaj, I have this question basically, which is a little bit of a disparity between just like my personality is that when I take Srila Prabhupada's lectures or my Guru Maharaj's lectures, I kind of take a pretty hard line approach and very, very straightforward, no beating around the bush. But in terms of actually following, I am not there yet. Mm. But I still have this tendency to stick, if I stick with somebody, a devotee or anybody, I stick to what I have heard. I may not be able to, I am not yet there 100%, but I don't want to deviate from what I have heard when I am speaking.
That's good.
But sometimes, like, I am pushed back by other devotees that, no, you cannot say like that, you are not, who are you, and those kind of things. So, what?
Who am I? I'm a person who's trying to follow these instructions. I may be doing it well or badly, but this is the right thing. Of course, the more I follow, the more persuasive my case will be. Otherwise, I'm trying to persuade you this is the right thing, and you ask me, are you doing it? Well... But it doesn't mean that we have to make a pretense that actually I'm like an avatar, you know, I'm perfect siddha, perfect soul. So here's what I'm telling you, take it from me. But we're trying to follow the instructions of Krishna. We're trying sincerely to follow Krishna's instructions. Sometimes we're deficient. But we have conviction that this is the right method. Something else? Yes?
What is your thought about faith, creating faith? I have a question that we have to make others faithful, or we have to make ourselves faithful, or like these two simultaneously will work?
Well, if we want to create faith in others, it does help to have faith in ourselves. But actually, explaining the science to others will increase my faith. You'd be amazed, actually, you speak this Bhagavad Gita to others, and they'll be astonished. Where did you get this knowledge? And you feel, oh, actually, something is there. Or from another point of view, you speak Bhagavad Gita, and you find out how foolish people are. You find out that even the greatest scholars, the greatest leaders in society, don't understand the difference between the body and the self. They're in the gross bodily misconception, thinking that yes, this lifetime is everything, and everything is body is, and a life is produced from karma rules. So many foolish ideas they have. It said Socrates became, there was an oracle, the famed oracle at Delphi, said that Socrates is the wisest person in Athens. He was doubtful, how could this be so? He began approaching the great men of Athens. And he saw the fools they were. And he became convinced, well, I'm not so wise, but at least I'm not as foolish as they are. It's astonishing, actually. You meet great, you know, people who have got graduate degrees, people who've got position, people who've got so many credentials, and you meet them and you find out what fools they are. Because even the beginning person, the person who's only beginning to understand Bhagavad Gita, knows so much more. So even you become astonished. How do I know more than these highly credentialed people? Well, just because I read a little bit of Bhagavad Gita, I know more. So what to speak of learning the science even more? So you get realization by speaking. The message of Bhagavad Gita is so nice. It enlightens the person who hears it. It enlightens the person who speaks it. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu requested, Bharata Bhumite Manusha Janma Vailojar Janma Sarta Kori Karupala, that those who've taken birth in Paramahansa, India, should make their life successful by understanding the science of Krishna and spread it for the welfare of others. Prabhupada did that. Such a great result is there. Prabhupada said, I'm only one Indian. If other Indians would take this seriously, how great the result could be. But what does it require? A little shraddha, a little faith that, yes, let me do it. Let me, whatever little credit I have, whatever little I've learned, let me speak. Of course, they have to actually learn it, not just one I heard from my grandmother. They should learn the science of Bhagavad Gita as it is and speak the same thing. And in the beginning, before I sat down, they spoke all my great credentials. What's my great credential? I just speak what my spiritual masters say. Then people say, oh, he's so modern. Yeah. It's easy. I don't do anything. I just repeat what I've heard. How hard is that? But you do that, and people will think that you're the wisest guy on the block. Then you can make the greatest contribution. If you discover a new chemical or a new comet or a new way to program a computer, that will have some small temporary value. But if you can present the science of Krishna and enable even one person to become Krishna conscious, so much value is there. Eternal. Anything else? Any other question?
Thank you, Maharaj, for such a nice class. This gentleman over here was saying earlier, now he's thinking, well, perhaps I should just discontinue my education and pursue this Krishna consciousness, and maybe forego pursuing wealth, and, career, family life, and whatever. So how should someone deal with so many people who are going to say, well, no, this is such a foolish move. Don't you realize that you may think you want to do this, but this is such a very hard thing for you to do. The likelihood you won't make it, and then you just won't get the spiritual reward that you think you're going to get.
You mean, Krishna, that question is placed by Arjuna before Krishna. This is my doubt. Someone starts the path and then he doesn't finish and then he's nowhere. right? He was on the path of material progress. He gave it up for spiritual life. And he doesn't succeed in his spiritual life. And now he's like a cloud that's torn apart in the sky. He sees nothing. Krishna said, no. Whatever progress he's made, this is eternal progress. Suppose he begins and falls down. He becomes distracted by material enjoyment and forgets about spiritual. Still, it's his permanent credit. If he made 2% or 10% or 50% or 80% progress, in his next life he begins where he left off. Materially, if you make 100%, you're 100% wiped out at the time of death. It's all lost. But spiritual gain is permanent. Increases, increases, increases till you reach 100%. Chanakya Pandit also analyzes the matter. He says if you give up material life for spiritual life, you didn't lose anything. Because everything material will be lost anyway. It's already a lost cause. So you didn't lose anything. But you got these supreme benefits. And if you give up spiritual life for material life, you lose everything. You lose spiritual life because you gave it up, and you lost material benefit because it's all taken away. Because it has no substance to begin with. So then which should I do? That's not to say that your only choice is quit school and join or rot in the material world. One may practice Krishna consciousness as a student, as a scholar, as a businessman, as a warrior, whatever. But if someone has the conviction, let me dedicate this one lifetime to Krishna, what's wrong there? I've already dedicated thousands of lifetimes to material responsibilities and material attempts for happiness. If I invest one lifetime for Krishna, what's the loss? From another point of view, if you give your life for your country, they'll say you're great. You gave up your family, you gave up your career, you gave up everything for the sake of liberating your country. They'll say you're fantastic. And what's your country? It's a piece of dirt. And if you make the same sacrifice for Krishna, they'll say you're a fool. If you give up material comfort, material everything, to get an Olympic gold medal, they'll say that you're a fantastic person. You went through so much discipline. Wave the flag. And if you undergo the same amount of trouble for Krishna, they'll say, what are you wasting your life for? Therefore I say that people are fools. It's not my saying, Krishna says. Namam duskritam bhuta pravayante nirava maya pitikam asura phanamishra. The dominant mode of life in the material world is foolishness. That will say. The student is a fool, the professor is a fool, the prospective employers are fools, those who are already employed are fools. And if they're not attentive to the problem of life, if they're busy making money, busy discovering new things, and not solving the problem of repeated birth and death, not addressing the problem of repeated birth and death, they're fools. Straight out. We don't give a damn about their credentials, about their degrees, about their bank balance, about where they stand in the Fortune 500. In our book, Bhagavad Gita, they're fools. And we'll stand on that. And people spend $250,000 to be certified as fools. And spend the next 10 or 15 years paying off the $250,000 that they've spent to be certified. Anything else? Okay. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna.